From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I want to open this hour with a note for listeners that this conversation involves allegations of sexual and emotional abuse, and it might be difficult for some to hear. Our connection this hour was made in 1997 at a popular Christian children's camp in western New York. The camp is called Circle C in Cattaraugus County, southwest of Buffalo. The camp has been led for years by a man named Wayne Arum, who is now 55 years old. Arum has served as youth pastor at a Buffalo area church called The Chapel in the 1990s and then took on the role of president of the Circle C Ranch when he was in his 30s. The USA Today News Network just published an extensive investigation into allegations of abuse against Arum. Specifically, Arum is accused of touching at least 16 teenage girls inappropriately over the years. Some of them were camp counselors, some were campers. Journalists Sarah Taddeo and Georgie Silverol interviewed many of Arum's accusers, as well as staff members who not only noticed disturbing patterns of behavior, but occasionally reported Arum to various authorities over the years. The women who are accusing Arum describe a consistent routine. Arum would ask about their personal lives, probing for vulnerable spots, often asking about boyfriends or family or even whether they've watched pornography. He would position himself as a kind of counselor, a friend, or even a therapist, and then he would touch them inappropriately during quiet or very private moments. Taddeo and Silverol opened their reporting with the allegations made by Joy McCullough, who was 15 years old in 1997 when she had a series of interactions with Wayne Arum. Arum was her youth pastor. In one encounter, Arum told her she was amazing and locked his hands with hers, and she found herself thinking, "This is the first person I've ever held hands with." He was more than twice her age. Taddeo and Silverol then write, quote, 19 years later, in 2016, at a Christian children's camp in western New York, 16-year-old Laura Snell straddled a bench facing Arum, who was now the camp's president. They were seated off to the side of the dining hall while a few other people milled around. He suggested that they pray. He ran his hands over her shorts and up her thigh, toward her crotch, and slid his fingers against her outer labia. Snell felt confused, she recalls. No one had ever touched her like that. End quote. These stories have cascaded forward from women of different ages who attended the camp and got to know Wayne Arum. As for Arum, he declined to be interviewed for their story, but has denied all the allegations, saying he never acted inappropriately. I have asked the two journalists behind the story to come on the program to detail how they did the reporting, what they have learned, what questions perhaps still remain unanswered here. Our guests include Sarah Taddeo, an enterprise reporter with USA Today Network, New York. Sarah, welcome. Nice having you back in the program.
Thank you so much, Evan. Appreciate you and glad to be here.
Georgie Silverol is a backpack reporter for the USA Today Network, New York. Georgie, welcome back. Nice to have you as well.
Thank you.
I'm just going to say to both Sarah and Taddeo from the start, I've got questions that, I mean, this hour is going to fly for me. I have just so many questions, and I admire the work that both of you have done. I will ask you questions. I'll occasionally address it to Sarah or Georgie. If one of you feels the other is better suited to respond, feel free to jump in. I'm just curious to kind of start there. Let's start with how this started to come together. I'll start with Sarah Taddeo. So this is a story that clearly took many months. Can you take listeners through what the process started with?
Sure. So I was contacted by somebody who knew Carolyn McDonald, who, if you've read the story, also if you're listening, you really should go and read the story. We'll be referring to a lot of the things in there here, obviously. But Carolyn is one of our main sources, I would say, who really took us on the journey of her abuse or her alleged abuse and everything that's happened since then. Including coming forward and all of that. And so I was contacted by someone who said, you know, I know Carolyn, I think that she wants to speak with you. Would you be interested in covering something like this? And they gave me a summary and I said, absolutely. You know, I would love to talk to Carolyn, obviously. So about a month or two later, I get a call from Carolyn. And she said, you know, I have this story. It was a big deal for her to share it. And she had done a lot before coming to the press to try to bring her allegations to the camp, bring her allegations to the chapel, which is the church in question in the story where Wayne Arum worked in the 90s. And so she had done all of that stuff in order to not have to come to the press. I think the press was not her first resort, but she eventually came to the point earlier on this year where she wanted to do that. And so I sat on the phone with her on a Zoom call for 3 hours, and she told me her entire story, as well as the chronicling of coming forward with her allegations over 2019 and 2020. And I remember.
We lost you for a second there, Sarah. Yeah, let's see if we can get Sarah back. And I, so Georgie, can you hear me? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get Sarah back on. I'm sure we'll just reestablish there. Georgie, can you let as we get Sarah back here, she'll talk about the process more in a second, but can you just let listeners know who Carolyn was and when she was at the camp?
Yeah, so Carolyn McDonald is a very primary a primary source for us and sort of this main figure throughout the story, although there's many, many women that we spoke with. Most of their stories are very briefly mentioned throughout the package, and that's because we had a lot of material to work with, unfortunately. But Carolyn has sort of been our primary point of contact, but also someone we sort of described to ourselves as our lightning rod. She began this process, and she has been probably the most forward-facing victim and survivor throughout, and she's been sort of connecting everybody and all the other victims and helping us establish those connections and sources throughout the process. So she's a key figure in the entire story, but also in our reporting process. Mm-hmm.
And Sarah, are you back with us? Can you hear me?
I can. Yes. Yeah, sorry about that. Don't know what happened.
No problem. So let listeners know, when was Carolyn, working at the camp and just a little bit of her background with Circle C.
Yeah. So she was working at the camp from 2006 to 2008. And she worked 3 summers as well as, so the camp, for those who don't know, it's a summer camp, but it also hosts a number of youth retreats, church youth group type activities. One of the main ones being something called snow camp, which is in the winter months. And typically this got changed because of COVID, but typically they have, youth groups come over the weekends, in the wintertime and will do camp, over the weekend and have games and different camp sort of activities. And so Carolyn would work those as well. So she would go sort of with youth group members that she knew from her church, but she would be hired at the camp to work those weekends. And so some instances of her alleged abuse happened on those weekends and some happened over the summers. When she was a counselor or another type of staff member over the summer.
Yeah. And so, just to sort of further paint the picture of consistency here, what I was struck by maybe most was how consistent the stories were of the many people that you talked to and the many women who are making these allegations. And those allegations include that, another session of camp would start, and that there was even a rolling joke in the camp that which of the girls on the staff would be, quote, Wayne's girls, thin, attractive looking, young, I didn't say young women, they were girls, they were minors, and almost always, and that it would involve getting waned was a phrase at the camp, which meant that he came and was way too touchy, way too much physical contact. So over the years, this was something that was noticed, and you even talked to staff members who had alerted authorities or were concerned about him being alone with girls and wondering if there was a risk or a danger there. So all of these stories were consistent, but they really didn't come out until, as you said, Carolyn raised this story. And it seems to me, Sarah, that the Me Too movement has kind of cracked something open here. In fact, one of the accusers says that the first person she thought of when the whole Me Too movement kind of launched was Wayne Arum. How important was that to getting Carolyn feeling like she was ready to talk about all of this?
Yeah, I think with Carolyn, it was more of a slow burn, if you will. Like, I don't know, I wouldn't want to speak for her and say, like,
sure,
when the Harvey Weinstein investigation came out, for example, she was like, oh my gosh, Wayne Arum. I've not heard that from her. But I do think the general culture of Me Too in the past few years, which was, of course, spurred on by articles like the Harvey Weinstein investigation, I think that that's brought people into a space where they're evaluating what kind of experiences they may have had in the past. And so I know for Carolyn, she was dealing with some personal issues that we detail in the article, and she went to therapy, and she's open about that, and she was dealing with some of those personal issues in therapy, and the therapist kind of was talking to her about her past, and Carolyn very sort of casually mentioned some of the things that would happen with Wayne, and the therapist was like, that's something, like, you, that's, let's dig into that, you know? And so I think, you know, through that is where Carolyn really was able to unpack what had happened to her, and why it was wrong. I think a lot of these women, as you were saying, Evan, you know, they have similar stories. I think a lot of them, because they were in this bubble, the spiritual bubble where, you know, Wayne was an authority, there were other men in authority, and they were all very revered and very well thought of. And when you're a young woman, a girl in that space, you are sort of trained to think, okay, well, if they are so well revered and they are doing this, then it must not be wrong. And so that is where a lot of these women came from in terms of, spending so much time thinking that none of this was wrong until they either went to therapy or talked to other friends who had the similar issues and realized that maybe there's something bad here.
Right. And that's why I think, Sarah and Georgie, it's... Without being too graphic for listeners who may be wondering about what kinds of abuse, there's multiple different layers here, especially when you read the stories that you have put out into the world now and letting these women's voices kind of tell their own story on how they were impacted. Some of it was sort of emotional manipulation, it seemed like. Certainly some of it was just physical. Abuse would be the word if the allegations are true. I mean, touching, my understanding is always outside of clothing, but touching, rubbing his hands all over women's breasts and genitals. I mean, like this was common in the allegations that you found. And yet for some of the people that you talked to, it was a process over the years of recognizing the damage. It wasn't always like, in fact, for some of the women, it sounds like in those moments over years ago, they thought it was either normal or part of their relation, a special relationship with Wayne, and that only over years did they kind of view it differently. I mean, not everyone was exactly like that, but is that fair, Sarah?
Yeah, I would say the majority of them at the time didn't see anything wrong. They may have felt a little uncomfortable, but it wasn't like alarm bells went off for everyone. I think a few women, as it's detailed in the story, really did at the moment that it was happening say there's something wrong here, and they went and told someone, or they went and talked to their family, or they went and talked to a friend or whatever, and we verify that those conversations occurred, and some of them are detailed in the article where they would go and say, I feel uncomfortable with this, but it wasn't always, I would say in the majority of cases, wasn't handled in the way that it could have been in order to really confront Wayne on some of these allegations or some of these situations that these young girls were saying were occurring. Do you want to add anything there, Georgie?
Yeah, I was just gonna mention that I think in the beginning of our reporting process, when we were talking about this story or telling our editors about it or telling our family members about it, one of the very early things that people will say is like, oh, well, is he raping people? Is he like seriously physically abusing people? And that's sort of a big thing you have to tackle in the story, which is that this sort of behavior, these grooming behaviors, these emotionally manipulative relationships can still be very, very damaging. And trying to prove that and show that and verify that with our sources and with experts on the topic is definitely something that we tried to achieve in the reporting process. But I did want to mention that one of the earliest, you had mentioned earlier, Evan, that all of the girls seem to have, or at least a lot of them seem to have very similar stories. There's a lot of conversations where we would interview somebody and they would say the same things that someone else had said on the phone an hour before. And Sarah and I would kind of look at each other and be like, oh my God, like, wow. one of the earliest memories that a lot of these girls who went to camp as campers had was that Wayne would hug them for a very long time, for a long enough time where they were slightly uncomfortable, and he was holding them and rubbing their backs and sometimes sliding his hands over their bottoms. And like, this behavior starts early, and it just kind of like, if you look at the progression throughout a girl's life, if she's spent several summers at camp, there's reasons why she wouldn't immediately react to it and be like, this is very wrong, you know, because she's been conditioned over the years to accept this form of physical touch from someone like Wayne Arum.
As hard as these stories were to read, I really admire the work Georgie and Sarah did here, because when you have allegations like this, I mean, these are explosive allegations with a very popular Christian children's camp. I mean, thousands of people a year over the summer, over the winter, attending. It's a camp that's still open. There's going to be an impact here. And when you have this kind of an allegation from one person, and then you hear it from another, and then, as Georgie just said, you hear the exact same story or something very, very similar from someone who was at the camp a decade apart from the last person you talked to. To me, that's what corroboration looks like, because you don't have video evidence often, even though you've got a few photographs of him kind of touching or doing some of the uncomfortable, you know, getting waned, as the staff used to describe. But corroboration's hard. Corroboration starts to look like the same story told over and over again. Sarah and Georgie, can I ask both of you to characterize, from your perspective as journalists, the sensitivity you have in reporting a story like this? Because you're human beings, you're talking to women who are giving you devastating accounts on how their lives were impacted, sometimes their personal relationships, sometimes their reticence to form healthy relationships because of how they were impacted. I mean, this is hard stuff. And so, you know, you can't help but be emotionally moved by their stories, but you also, you know, you have to at least want to give Wayne Arum a chance to tell a story. He would not talk to you. He put out a statement denying all of this. But you're still journalists and not activists. And I think the work that you did looks like real corroboration, from my perspective. Can you give me a sense for how you viewed that process and how dedicated you were to making sure that when you hit publish on this, that you felt like you had done as much as you possibly could to say, we are elevating the voices of people whose stories are credible, Sarah?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, great question. I mean, that is the question, right, on these kind of stories. And I knew from the minute that we talked to Carolyn, I mean, just by listening to Carolyn for 3 hours, she was, you know, struck me as very credible. But I knew that I would have to corroborate her story in order to publish really any of it, because it was so explosive, because it was, accusing somebody who had not been charged, frankly, with anything, by law enforcement. So it's like, you need to have your ducks in a row on something like this. And I have done several other investigations in the past where I've had to do a large volume of corroboration. And so, you know, talking to Georgie in the early days of this in January and February, we were saying, okay, we need to have other women to corroborate this story, and we need to have them say something very similar. We just didn't realize that we were going to get 14 on the record people to say almost the exact same thing. And so that really, as you said, Evan, does help with corroboration, especially over 25 years. You know, if it's over 2 years or something, even that is like a little less corroboration than what we have here. This is, you know, a pattern of very similar actions to women who didn't know each other. That's the other thing. It's not like this was, you know, one kind of cycle, if you will, of a youth group of like people who were there in the same time in their high school years and all want to like be out to get someone. Like, these are women who are 21, ages 21 to 42 right now. So they did not know each other, and so that's a big part of the corroboration of this story. Another thing is documents. I mean, we have police reports, we have Department of Health reports, inspection reports for the camp. We have letters that went back and forth between Circle C Ranch and the chapel and different individuals. And we have meetings, and we have all of these transcripts and statements from Circle C Ranch that are on their website. People, at least up until early this week, people could go and look at those. They should still be up there. You know, so we really did a deep document dive on this. And then, of course, when you finish writing something like this, we finished writing this sometime in early April, I believe, and then starts the editing process, which, you know, as frustrating as that can be, because you want your story to get out and the sources want the story to get out, it is a huge process to go through with your editors and our lawyers to make sure that we have an airtight story. Jordy, do you want to add?
No, you covered it. Yeah, it's just that we, this wasn't something that we took some, you know, one person story. And of course, you go into it, you know, believing your sources and believing them, and then also committing to the fact that you're going to verify everything they say. And if their story doesn't line up with what you're finding, you're going to go back and confront them with that. And nothing we found led us to do that, especially with someone like Carolyn, who started this process for us. So
let's talk then about what has happened over the years at various points that led to an investigation of whether Wayne Arum was behaving inappropriately. First of all, there's two former employees that stand out to me. One, a woman who was not a teenager. She was, I don't remember how old she was at the time, but she said it was an honor to go work at this place. And then she starts to feel deeply uncomfortable with what she's seeing. The other, a man who was, I think, in his teenage years, but he at the time was almost positioning himself whenever he would notice Wayne and a girl or a young woman or a girl on staff or even a female camper alone because he was worried about what was happening. Georgie, can you tell the listeners a little bit about these two people who I think, when you talk about corroboration, those are pretty powerful accounts from my perspective as a reader. Can you tell us about them?
Yeah. So obviously we started with the victims. That was pretty much where we focused in the beginning for the first couple of months. Like I said previously, Carolyn definitely became our connection to a lot of those people. She had been in touch with several of those women, and those who were comfortable speaking and wanted to share their stories, she sort of filtered them to us, and we'd do our own interviews with them and see where their comfort level was and sharing their stories. Did they want to be on the record? Did they want to be off the record? But then after we got through that, we realized that, you know, obviously verification is a big part of the process, and we had to find real people to tell us these things. Like, we talk about terms like getting waned or Wayne's girls. Like, are these words that you were hearing? Are these things people talked about? And so I think you're referring to Joe Ferranti, which is one of our sources in the story. Yeah. Who took this on and knew about this stuff. And one of his like big memories of camp is when people would pick out, okay, who's Wayne going to cozy up with or spend time with, or however you want to put it, you know, who are Wayne's girls going to be this summer? And it was talking to people who were witnesses rather than victims themselves that we really needed to verify and bolster the story and make it so that when a skeptical reader is going through it, they're not just saying, oh, well, of course these girls are out to get this guy, or they're angry at him, or they're bitter, or they're, you know, whatever it might be. We wanted to make sure that you had somebody who wasn't so personally affected by it, who witnessed it, that was comfortable going on the record and verifying these accounts through their own experiences.
Sarah,
I'm going to defer to Sarah
Yeah, you want to add there, Sarah?
Too. Yeah, I mean, I'll just reflect what Georgie said. I think that's, you know, we needed those extra, I don't want to call them extra, but kind of like outside accounts of people who, you know, can't be accused of kind of, you know, wanting attention from Wayne and not getting it. And so therefore you spread some rumor about him. Like these, you know, Joe and the other men at the camp, as far as we know, were never uncomfortable with any way that Wayne was touching them or anything like that. So they really didn't have a dog in this fight other than to watch what was going on with the female counselors and other staff members. And so to have Joe Ferrante go on the record and say, like, yeah, like I heard that. And also he confronted the leadership, you know, he says. And so they were seeing things that were not okay and decided to speak up. And, you know, and then Linda Smith, who was the accountant, business manager there for a time in the mid-2000s at the camp, she did see some of these things and was very disturbed by it and tried to talk to a few people at the camp, a few adult staff members, to say, hey, you know,
are you seeing this? And then she decided to go to some authorities with it. And none of it was really followed up on. None of it was really taken forward to and looked into, she says, and in terms of who followed up with her or anything. You know, there was no changes at the camp that she saw at the time. And then she left. So, and she left kind of really saying, you know, my view of this camp, my view of being honored to work here is really tarnished by this, because I'm not seeing people stand up and say there's something wrong here. And so to have her thoughts in the story about all of that just backs up everything that the girls were saying, you know, everything that the girls experienced, it was noticed by people who were there, and whether or not they said anything was up to them. But now is the time where you look back and you say, wow, like, why didn't anybody else, any of the other adults, say anything?
Well, speaking of that, after we take this only break, listeners, I think you need to hear where things stand now, because from what you just heard about the former employees who raised alarms years ago to where that leads us next in this conversation, which is internal investigations and what happens when the camp looks into it, what happens when outside counsel looks into it, and where they go next, and whether this camp is still open with the same leadership. Journalist Sarah Taddeo and Georgie Silverol teamed up on this reporting for the USA Today Network. You probably saw it in the Democrat and Chronicle. And this is, I'll take the time to say it. Sarah mentioned this earlier, but I'll take the time to say it. When we talk about supporting journalism with your dollars, it's important because otherwise stories like this do not get done. Stories like this do not get told, and voices like these are not heard. So I greatly appreciate their work and their explanation for how they put the process together to bring this reporting to the Democrat and Chronicle and the USA Today Network. We're back with Sarah and Georgie after this only break. Coming up in our second hour, a summer movie preview. We've been waiting for a long time to be able to have this show. Movie theaters are back open. Hollywood is sending its films back to the big screen. Whether it's documentaries or just junk food entertainment, even LeBron James on the big screen, we're going to have a summer movie preview with some clips. Get ready for a summer of movies next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So Sarah and Georgie, if you could, Sarah Taddeo, Georgie Silverol, reporters with the USA Today Network and the Democrat and Chronicle, joining us talking about their investigation into the Circle C Ranch, a Christian children's camp in western New York, and a man named Wayne Arum, who has led that camp since he was in his 30s. He's now 55 years old. 16 women who were teenage girls at the camp have accused Arum of sexual abuse, emotional abuse, inappropriate touching, and more. And Sarah and Georgie brought this reporting to us with their story that you might have seen recently. And so when the camp itself and when the chapel goes to investigate, maybe Sarah and Georgie, Sarah, if you can explain the relationship with the chapel and, you know, then what the investigations brought out here.
Yeah, so it's quite a lot of investigation. We spent a lot of time trying to boil this down for the story to make sure that normal readers could understand. But essentially, the camp has a lot of financial relationships with various churches around the area, right, to work with them and have the youth groups come there and enjoy the camp and things. And so the chapel and Circle C had a financial relationship and a sort of participatory relationship where the chapel youth group would go there a lot. Kids from the chapel youth group would work there during the summers. And so they had that relationship. And when some of the women who were both accusing Wayne of abuse at the chapel in the 90s at the youth group and in the Circle C environments later on in the 2000s, all of those women, or not all, but many of them eventually made it to talking to John Camardo, who was the executive pastor there at the chapel, and shared their stories with him. And he worked a lot with them to try to broker conversations with Wayne, broker conversations with the board of Circle C Ranch, to try to just get some understanding here and get everybody kind of in the same room. And as might be imagined, many of the women didn't want to face Wayne directly, didn't want to have those direct conversations, maybe didn't even want their names out at different times of this process. But that's kind of how the process happened started with the chapel where, you know, John got involved and was trying to help these women just get their stories out, be able to tell what it is that they were comfortable telling at that point, and try to bring some understanding, if not reconciliation. And, you know, it sort of didn't go, I think, the way the women were hoping, you know, but that's how sort of things got going. And from there, there was a number of meetings. And then last fall is when the chapel decided to take the step of bringing in Ministry Safe, which is a company that's works that sort of was born out of a law firm in Texas. And Ministry Safe's primary goal is to work with legal investigations of Christian settings, so churches or camps like Circle C or whatever. And so Kimberly Norris, who is an attorney and the founder of Ministry Safe, embarked on that investigation last fall and found many, many corroborating stories, just like we did, of women who have had these sort of experiences with Wayne at camp and at the chapel. And she put together those findings earlier this year and then went to law enforcement and state agencies with them orally. And then later on in the spring, she published a written report that she sent to agencies like Child Protective Services, law enforcement, you know, in the local area as well as statewide. So she really led that charge from kind of a more official investigative standpoint. And then from there, law enforcement agencies got involved. They did investigations. And we detail in one of our stories how, you know, there was not a lot of urgency right away in terms of really looking into these things, especially not in the mid-2000s. It's picked up closer to 2020, 2021. But we lay out sort of everything that's gone on. And to me, it doesn't appear that there was a ton of urgency overall with the things that Ministry Safe found.
Sure. The chapel, I think if I'm remembering from the video portion of an interview that you published, was it the pastor of the chapel who essentially said, we believe the women?
Yes. Right. Yeah. Can I jump in here?
Yeah, please, Georgie. Yep.
I just want to make sure that we also highlight the really deep connection between the chapel and Circle C Ranch, because I think that was one of the harder things for me to understand in the beginning is how deeply entwined the two are. So when the chapel was founded by somebody named James Andrews back in the 1950s or 60s, at the same time, Wayne Arum's father, Wes Arum Sr., was founding Circle C Ranch. And the two were very close, and they've always had this legacy connection that Sarah was mentioning, and that financial connection and that relationship where people who went to the chapel would also send their kids to Circle C Ranch and all that stuff. But then also Wes Arum Jr., Wayne's brother, was a pastor at the chapel up until very recently. He resigned in the midst of all this. So it kind of can be confusing, I think, for somebody who doesn't understand the dynamics of the Western New York Christian community and the chapel, which I didn't know before all this, is pretty much a mega church with a you know, congregation of about 5,000 people in various locations. And so for them to be so heavily involved in this is very jarring in that Christian community out in Western New York, because so many people are very familiar with both of those places, and they've been connected and intertwined for decades.
But no longer, correct, Georgie?
No. Yeah, they are, they have, the chapel has severed ties to Circle C Ranch. As you were mentioning in that video, Jerry Gillis, they've become very public and very firm on their stance that they believe the women that are speaking out, and they, you know, are choosing to promote that stance and that, you know, that take that they believe the victims and what the victims are saying.
Yeah. And so,
and that in turn makes it so you can't continue a relationship with Wayne Arum and Circle C Ranch anymore, especially if Wayne Arum continues to deny the allegations.
Which he does. And you know, Georgie, I know there is strength in numbers, but there's still tremendous risk, first of all, for any person who has been victimized to come forward. And as you say, this is the chapel has a lot of members. It certainly was a source of campers and families who sent kids to this camp for many, many years. And yes, we're talking about some really dark allegations against Wayne Arum, but he also has a lot of people who probably think he's a great guy and can't believe this and are really struggling with this. And I know, Georgie, you wanted to, if you could, get people on the record to at least talk about that. That seemed difficult. Is that right?
Yeah, so I'll let Sarah speak to that because she did more of that legwork at the time. But yeah, we had reached out to several people who on social media had expressed, you know, support for the Arams and that they, you know, didn't really believe the allegations or whatever it was. And then every person we reached out to declined to comment and did not want to speak on the record, mm-hmm. including the Arams. You know, we reached out to Wayne. We emailed back and forth with Wayne a lot. We reached out to his brother, Wes Jr. We reached out to his son, Josh. We reached out to, there's a couple other people on the Circle C board that we reached out to. And no one wanted to speak with us over the phone or in person or on Zoom for any of this reporting.
Sarah, do you want to add to that?
Yeah. So like one of the ways that we tried to approach people who were supporting Wayne and Circle C as a whole was on social media. So as people might have noticed, there were some stories published by Buffalo news media outlets in March regarding Kimberly Norris's Ministry Safe report that got out there at that time. And so a lot of those social media comments surrounding those posts of those stories were people supporting Wayne Arum and saying he could never have done this and these women are out to get him and all of those things. And so I went back through and looked at those and I contacted those people and I said, hey, we're also doing a story. You know, we have some of these women on the record. Would you like to talk about your experience maybe at Circle C that you had a great time, that you never had bad experiences with Wayne? Like, I would love to hear that because we need to have that if we can for fairness of the piece. And many people never got back to me. Some people told me to take a hike. Other people said, you know, I would love to talk, but I don't want my name in the article. And we said, well, listen, you know, we need on the record women who say this happened to them. So we need on the record people saying that, you know, it didn't or sort of poo-pooing the allegations or saying that Circle C is a great place and Wayne is a great person. So, you know, and people just didn't want to. I had someone actually even this week email me and say, I'd love to share my thoughts. And I said, okay, let's get on a phone call. And they didn't want to. And it's like, you know, that's what we needed in order to do that. So we did reach out to a number of people for that and didn't find anyone who was willing to be quoted.
So, Sarah, what's going on with Wayne Arum now?
So, yeah, as Georgie said, you know, he hasn't, we did speak to him a little bit over email, got a few statements from him over email in the past few weeks. Haven't heard from him in a while. He sort of stopped communicating with us. We haven't heard from anybody else at the ranch. And we don't know of anything that has gone on other than there is a lawsuit that has been filed against the chapel. You can find it under the Erie County, public records there. It's there. It is for defamation and sort of related things. So that is the only thing that we have heard from Circle C Ranch at this point. There's been no statements, no reaction, no posts, no nothing on their website that we've been able to see. So, you know, he's still in charge at the camp. The camp has been through an interesting year with COVID. They did not have summer camp last year. They did something called Snow Camp to Go earlier this year where they traveled around to different churches, I believe, or sort of Christian settings around the Northeast and took snow camp like two youth groups instead of youth groups coming to the location there in Cattaraugus County. So we know that that happened. We know that Wayne Arum, you know, lives on the camp grounds. Like that's where the family lives. And so we believe he's still there. He's still working with the camp at this point. And, you know, there's been no charges filed, nothing like that that we know of at this point.
He is still in charge of the camp. And the camp is slated to open for a summer session soon?
So yeah, they have on their website that they're trying to figure out with COVID, it says on their website, what their plans are for having campers this summer. Yeah.
But it's very possible that the camp could be back open with campers and staff as normal with Wayne in charge this summer.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is that, yeah, is his family owns the property and owns the camp. And he is, you know, the director of this camp that he owns. So there's no one, you know, it's not like it's a town, you know, summer recreation program where, you know, he could be removed from his position by somebody else. but that's just not the reality here. So
let me get a little listener feedback. A really good email from Patty, and I appreciate this. She says, Evan, I'm a fan of the show, and I learn a lot every week, and you are one of the most careful and considered speakers on any medium, and I want to caution you today about your use of the word just on today's show. The phrase you employed was, some experienced just physical abuse. There may be victims listening, and I imagine that phrasing might be hurtful to them. There is no such thing as just physical abuse. All physical abuse brings emotional and psychological and mental abuse, whether it's perceived in the moment or not. This whole story is beyond horrific. Thank you for shining a light. Patty, that is totally fair. And just to, I just want to affirm Patty's point there and just say that if I use that phrase, I think what I was probably trying to say is some of the allegations are of one nature and some are another and some sort of combined. But Patty is right. I mean, if a woman who was 16 says, you know, I was sexually abused or physically abused or touched inappropriately, then yes, that is almost certainly not in a vacuum. I mean, that's just not how it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say, Patty, I appreciate that, and I agree with you. And so thanks for holding us to account on that. And on the phone, this is Rich in Rochester. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Hey, Evan. How you doing?
Good, sir.
These type of stories are horrific, but I think this points out the constant protections we give religious groups, especially Christian groups in this country. Why is there a Christian-led investigation? In any other organization, it would be a DA's office. We give way too much leeway to these groups. And this assumption that because they're Christian, they're good, that needs to be removed. They should be looked at all the time. And there should be someone watching every Christian group, just like they watch every other group, like they watch every other preschool. This notion that because it's a religious group, somehow they're better, this stinks of that. And this is what's protecting this man.
Hmm. Thank you, Rich, for the phone call. Georgie, Sarah, anything you want to add to his point there?
Can I? I just want to mention that while the investigation with Ministry Safe was fostered by the chapel, and Kimberly Norris did go through and talk to several women who had allegations to share, Kimberly Norris did take those allegations to the authorities at the end of her findings, and all of them were deemed to be not criminally actionable, either because they, grooming behaviors aren't a misdemeanor or a felony. And there was one particular instance that could have been, but that the one girl who had this experience with Wayne had been told that the statute of limitations had passed for her to press charges. Mm-hmm. So basically they did try to pursue, a criminal, lawsuit or charges, but they were told that it wasn't going to be possible and that the DA wouldn't support that.
Yeah, and I think, to Rich's point, there is a sort of layer of this story and other stories of, if it's a Christian setting, it must be good. These things don't happen in Christian settings. And for readers who haven't read it yet, Rachel Benhollander, who was the first woman to come forward publicly accusing Larry Nassar of sexual abuse in a gymnastics setting, she references that. She is a Christian. She, is active in her own Christian settings in her life, and said, those sort of settings can, not always, but can protect this sort of behavior because people don't see it and they don't think that it could ever happen there. And when you have that thought process, that attitude that something could never happen there, that's when you miss things and things could be happening out in the open. So Rich, you're so right. And I think there needs to be more of a Me Too reckoning along those lines in Christian settings.
Mark emails to say, isn't there a camp board that could remove this director?
Yes, there is a camp board, and I'm not totally sure of all of the ins and outs of whether they could remove him. I would think so, based on my knowledge of boards and directors.
He is a member of the board himself, so I'm not sure if that changes things. But, you know, based on their previous actions, like they brought in an outside counsel earlier last year to do an investigation of the claims that were coming in at the time. And the outside counsel recommended that Wayne be removed or that Wayne step down. And that did not happen. And the board is made up of essentially the same men that it was made up of then. It's made up of now. So, you know, I don't know if that's a possibility. I would think so, but I'm unsure if that would be the way that they take care.
It's a little bit of a reflection of what happens when powerful organizations are allowed to police themselves. Even when there are recommendations for discipline, they don't have to follow them. And in this case,
yes. The
board said, we're going to bring in this outside counsel. The outside counsel came back and said, got to get rid of this guy. In fact, there's way too much family connection. You got to make some serious changes. And apparently the camp board said, thanks for that, but no. And
yes. Have
not made any changes. So have you heard, I'll start with Sarah. I'll ask both of you. Have you heard from other people who attended the camp, who worked at the camp since your story broke, coming forward to tell you more, any additional stories?
Yes. So we actually had a sort of, I don't want to say backlog, but many other women had contacted us just over the past month or two. And at that point, we had already written the story. And so we said, listen, we're going to keep your numbers on file. We want to talk to you eventually. But right now we're trying to get this first story out there. And so we have a list of women who came forward just in the past few months to us wanting to share their stories, as well as women who we had a form with the story that ran yesterday where you could click on it and share your experiences, and they would go straight to us into a Google file there. So, you know, if you're reading the story, you want to share your experience with Wayne or the Circle C Ranch, you can do so right now on the internet. And so we've gotten a number of stories through that, I believe 6 or 7 at this point, from other women who have had experiences that are similar to the ones that are detailed in the story. And so we're going to continue to report those. We're going to continue to talk to those women. We believe that everybody should have a chance to be heard.
Anything you want to add, Georgie?
Just sort of on that thread, that I am so grateful to all the women that shared their stories with us throughout this process. As you mentioned earlier, it is heavy. It's emotionally taxing. It's dreadful, and it's horrible to do. And it's also a huge responsibility to take what someone's telling you about what may or may not have been the worst point in their life and try to summarize it for the public to consume. And you know, you just hope you're doing a good job with it, and you hope that you're telling the truth and their truth, and you're sharing that. And there's just, it's just so much responsibility. And it's, I just am very grateful to all the women that were brave enough to go on the record with us and, you know, put themselves out there, because we could not do this story if they didn't have the courage to do that.
Has Wayne Arum acknowledged anything in that, you know, he has denied anything inappropriate. Has he acknowledged that, that sometimes he kind of broke the camp's own commandments that you write about, where staff shouldn't be physically touching each other? Has he acknowledged anything like that, Sarah?
All he said was that there may be situations in which there's an emergency or something, and you know, males and females would have to have physical contact. He said also that, you know, as a youth pastor or a camp director, there would be times in which you'd be comforting someone, or you'd be congratulating someone, and you'd give them a hug, or you'd pat them on the back or something. And he said, you know, I did those things, but they were in socially appropriate context in the 1990s. And I've never done anything inappropriate. I've never touched anyone inappropriately, outside of those kinds of contexts. He also said, you know, he may have been alone with a woman in a room if he walked in and they were present and nobody else was present or something like that. But he has not acknowledged the pattern of allegations that have come forward. He has not acknowledged the damage that this may have caused or has caused these women. He has not acknowledged any of those things.
Mm. And Georgie, I'll send the last question your way. I will say that, you know, in covering these kinds of stories over the years, I have noticed a little bit of a change in audience feedback. There used to be more of the kinds of things I just saw in an email that I'm not going to read, but there used to be more listeners questioning, well, how come you didn't speak up at the time? You know, how come if he's literally touching your genitals through your clothes, you know, that's beyond anything. How could you not say anything? And I think what your reporting makes clear, Georgie, is how much power this man has in this setting, the power dynamic between a 30 or a 40 or a 50 something and a 15, 16, 17 year old girl, and the fear that someone might have in saying something. I mean, it is not easy, and I think you've opened the door with your reporting for that, but I wonder if you have any final thoughts on that, Georgie.
No, that was kind of what I was going to say, is that's what you're trying to build, right? Is this, you're trying to show the reader through your reporting and through what you've been told and through all these interviews and documents and what people say, that this is a world that Wayne Arum created, and one where his behavior was allowed to go unchecked and unquestioned. These things were normalized. Wayne's girls, getting Wayne'd, all of this stuff was very much a part of the culture of this environment where, you know, he used his spiritual authority to normalize it all. And so I think that's kind of what you want readers to get out of it, right? Is that all we can do is go in and take all of the reporting, take the information we have and present it to the reader and say, here's what's going on, here's what we've found, and sort of leave them with these stories. And you know, we're not out to get anybody. We don't have an agenda. We just really need to tell these stories because it's important. And then the reader has to come to their own conclusions and determine how they're going to feel and how they're going to react to something like this.
Well said. Hey, Sarah, where should people reach you if they want to be in touch with you in the future on this?
Oh, absolutely. spatio@danette.com is my email. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook. Please reach out if you've got a story that you want to share.
Georgie, same. Do it fast.
All right. Well, I'm at GSilverall on Twitter, and you can email Sarah and she'll forward it to me. It's that
easy. Sarah and Georgie, we're grateful for your work and your careful work on this difficult story. Thank you both.
Thank you, Evan, for having us.
Sarah Tadio, Georgie Silverol, reporters for the USA Today Network. More connections coming up.